You do it all via the archive, and you have a system for grading it while you're watching all the clips of very, 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 very good or whatever it is. But you once said to me that you think that since the smartphone, you can't, people are too conscious now on camera.
It is really interesting this because for this series, I spent a lot of time going through documentaries, news footage in the BBC, going through the 90s. At about 1998, people stopped being real. I can't explain it any more than that. You know, well, you know this from television.
Yeah.
When you are watching someone on television, your radar knows almost immediately whether they are really. I know they know they're being
Yeah.
filmed. Of course, that's self-consciousness. But you know whether they are truly being themselves
Yeah.
to an extent,
Yeah.
or whether they are just performing. And somewhere about 1998, it's before the internet, they begin to recede. I couldn't really do it because to do that, you would have to be rude to people. You'd have to say,
Yeah.
look, this person is performing. And I don't
Yeah.
like doing that at all.
Yeah.
And everyone in these films I like, I think.
Do you feel, because of what we've just been talking about, that people stop being able to be authentic or whatever, that in future it's going to become harder and harder to make these kind of films because the more you move into the now or even to the last, to the, say, the 2000s,
The archive's going to get
the
more boring.
archive is less, because so much of what you do comes from like the start of an interview or the end of an interview, before, when people think the cameras have stopped rolling.
Well, I mean, I just got the sense that what you were watching, or what I was watching as I looked through all this stuff, was you saw the genuine self just receding. It was almost like
Yeah.
it was going down a tunnel into the distance and being replaced by something else, which felt quite two-dimensional.
A lot of those, as you say, the older clips of people talking, not only, by the way, the accents we don't hear anymore,
Yeah.
there is a lack of self-consciousness that we don't see and hear anymore.
A
Stopped
guilelessness.
it, a guilelessness. Yeah, what stopped
I
it?
don't know. I mean,
Yeah.
I think it's something to do. If you have a society where you are encouraged, as Mrs. Thatcher did, but it was there before, to feel that what you desire and what you feel is the centre of your world. When things are going well, that's great. And I would argue, and I tried to show this in the films, that it was quite a wild and quite frightening time, but it was also exciting up until the end of the 90s. And it is very interesting that actually that very moment that I see the self beginning to recede down that tunnel, it's the very moment at which the Labour Party, what was called New Labour, give away their last bit of their power, which
Yeah.
is the control over the economy, over interest rates, to the Bank of England, which you could argue is one of the great reasons why we have such problems today economically. And I think it's to do with the fact that if you're internalized and you believe that everything you feel is the center of the world, when things start to go wrong, it's frightening. And if the people outside, the politicians, the journalists, people like us, haven't got an explanation for why you are feeling as you do, you retreat. And I think I mean, this is just a hypothesis. I felt that what I might be seeing was the retreat of people into themselves because they were anxious and alone. And I would argue that is a genuine big feeling now.
And the attempt to control their own bodies, that it's interesting, the stuff on bulimia and anorexia that features in the films.
I thought it was important to separate out bulimia and anorexia.
Yeah.
What was really fascinating about bulimia, which Princess Diana gave a fascinating quote
Yes.
about, is that you can look normal. And I do think that it relates to what we're talking about the retreat of the self. Everything looks normal now, but in a strange, heightened, almost pantomime way. And it makes you suspect that there's some other maelstrom going on inside millions and millions of people's heads that no one's got the answer for out there. No one, including us journalists. We have got no language to describe it. And if there is a revolution happening, it's beginning to brew inside people's heads.
Do you think it's possible for a revolution? You believe, I know you believe that people can still come together in groups, but
You don't.
no, I don't. It's not that I
I
don't,
do.
but I do believe it, but I think it's hard, and I think that the thing in their hands is preventing them. The phone in their hands is preventing them. It atomizes them, and I think that some reaction against the technology must be the precursor to coming properly together in groups.
I think that you need something that is so powerful in its imaginative response to the way people feel that it overwhelms that.
Yes.
I don't think this whole idea. It's the HR attitude to life, which is, oh, if phones are bad, well, we'll get rid of them. Just like you clear your desk
No,
in
I
a
don't.
building. It isn't like that. Phones are a prod, and the way they are constructed, and this way the feedback systems in social media are a response to us, and they are responding to the mood that has grown up in our society. I don't believe in technological determinism. I think it's us. who are creating the way phones are. So if you really want to get rid of what you've been talking about, you've got to change society. And that's going to happen when someone comes up with a language that actually makes sense of why people feel this strange relationship with the phone.
People who have come up with that language, to some extent, are the people like are the populists at the moment, are Trump, or even to a much lesser extent, Nigel Farage, who people feel talks more like the times.
Or to you know, be rest as entertainment about it, the Joe Rogans world, who are finding a way through that seems to make more sense to people.
But I would argue that they are cosplaying a nostalgia.
Yeah.
I mean, in a funny way, Trump is cosplaying old 1960s radicalism sometimes. He sometimes feels like that. It doesn't feel like the future. It feels like they've receded into a, I'm trying not to use the word performative, but just a sort of a two-dimensional world. And what we're waiting for is that sort of way someone, a new form of collectivism will happen if it actually explains to you why you're feeling as you do.
Do you think that would come from, to bring it back to media, do you think that would come from an individual? As you say, imagination is the thing you needed, and often imagination is a solitary thing. Do you think it comes from somebody making a leap, or do you think it comes from a generation who grow up watching everybody taking selfies of themselves next to statues, pouting the same pout and thinking, I wonder if there's something different. This feels like the ancient... I sometimes feel when I look at people with their phones, I feel like I'm living in the past. I feel like this is going to look so old one day when we've worked our way through it. Do you think this new generation, the way they look at media and the way they watch things and the ridiculousness of the media environment they've come into, do you think their reaction to that might be the thing that saves us?
Yeah. Don't you?
I always think that. I think any reaction has an equal and opposite reaction. But I think we're too steeped in it to be able to do it ourselves.
Towards the end of the series, I try and reconceptualize it and say what originally was a liberating force, finance and social media, has become a force that extracts things from you. And consciously, there is this sense that everyone is trying to extract something out of you. They want to extract money from you. They're going to see Lana Del Rey. They want to charge you absolute fortunes. At the same time, they're trying to extract anger out of you in order to monetize that. Everything is just being played back, and extracted out of you. The first step is to conceptualize that. What is this new system of power? Now, the politicians don't do that. Yeah. They never step outside their own world.
Hard to, because they have to be short-termist by the very nature of politics.
As you say, self-consciously made themselves front of house people to power, having completely divested themselves of meaningful powers.
I mean, I sometimes wonder whether Trump is really a politician, whether he's actually something.
Oh, he's definitely not. Because politics is...
He's part
politics.
Of the extraction machine. Yeah. Well, I've got this theory that entertainment or mass entertainment has become something else.
Oh, great. Go on. I'm going to lean forward.
Now, I'm part of the problem as well. It's that there's a historian I really like. He's called Eric Hobsbawm. Very good. And he was a populist as well.
And he's on Shifty.
And I put him on Shifty because I thought he was great.
I think it's documentary. I said he's in Shifty.
Okay.
I'm Light Entertainment, so I say he's on Shifty.
I'm sorry.
He's on that show Shifty. Yeah, so you watch. Yeah, you like it.
See, Richard Categories.
Yes, exactly.
He wrote a piece in introducing one of his books where he says, I really like the phrase, he says, there is this, what he called it, it's the twilight zone between memory and history. And what he's talking about is in the most recent past, the past is contained in millions and millions of fragments of experience inside people's heads.
Yeah.
That's where it is. Taken together, it means nothing. It's just like a giant mess. And then he says that what happens is those millions of fragments, most of them just fall away, and those that remain settle into a pattern, which becomes history. And I've got this theory that because we are continually replaying the past all the time, on our technology.
Because there's so much recorded data.
So much recorded data. There's so many old recorded programs that they keep on adding to the fog of experience and they won't go away.
Yeah.
Which means that actually we are stuck forever in that twilight zone.
We can't put a narrative on experience. We can't impose order on it.
We can't do what he was describing. We can't let it all fall away and then something emerge which gives it a shape out of it, which actually means that we are blocking the way to the future. That actually entertainment and people like me who continually replay songs, images, music from the past.
But you have tried to put an artistic or impose an artistic order on that kind of formless tide of experience of the last 40 years. And I think you have.
Yeah, so, but it's still playing it all back to you.
Mm.
You know, whether it even bucks fizz or not, it's still playing back. And someone pointed out to me the other day that when you watch, comedy shows on YouTube, you're listening to the laughter of the dead most of the time. But it's a haunting. And I just...
That's like whenever I see a cat or a dog on an old drama, I'm like, oh no,
yes.
that cat's no longer with us.
Like Bruno.
But is that a function of the fact that we are quite old? Is that a function of the fact that we sort of came of age at a time where actually this extraordinary wave of culture was coming at us? Films, TV programs, people being filmed in their homes which you hadn't seen before, pop music, all of this was new. And we're the generation who has gone back over it and over it and over it. Whereas if you were coming to the generation now, that is just a part of the culture, which is our generation's attempt to constantly rehash our own culture.
I think that's probably true, but I think what we created is a monster embracing everyone.
It's narcotizing. The technology, to some extent, has been narcotizing. That's what I mean by the fact that, it drugs you.
Lovely. Narcotizing, yeah. I like that.
It comes from the word narcotic.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's not a long word.
I worked it out.
That's what I mean of having the phone in your hand all the time, is that it sort of anaesthetizes you from things that you might, in previous eras, you might have rushed out and grabbed.
Would you like to be the person who cracks the code and brings us into the next bit of the future? Is there something in your work that you think, I wonder if I could help?
I mean, I think I'm part of the problem, personally. I mean, I'm still doing... I just wonder whether in 50 years' time, they'll look back and they say, they just wanted to stay with the dead. You know, they were frightened of the future. That's what I think people will say. I go back to that thing I spotted in the 90s. Everyone was mixing and jumbling everything up. It wasn't just what you were saying about there was this mass of things. It was the way everything got jumbled up, way before the internet. And that's what we live with today. And it's sort of like a ring of two-dimensional images and sounds all around us. And we can't see the future. That's what I feel. But it may be even deeper than that, that actually some of the underlying belief systems that underlie that entertainment age, like self-expression. Self-expression is now seen as the god.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be self-expressive. Maybe that's the conformity of our time. Like we look back at Victorians and say, oh, they were very conformist. Maybe the conformism of our time is... oh, everyone has got to express themselves. What if we don't? What if we actually surrender ourselves to something else? Maybe that will...
What if we stop expressing ourselves?
Yeah, a great believer in tamping down the feelings and not talking about them all.
Listen to our podcast on that subject next week.
But imagine you came out of your house, walked around the world by yourself and didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
You couldn't conceive of it, could you?
Well, I'd do it, but I'd love to do a documentary about it. The brilliant comedian Sean Locke once said he did a joke on 8 out of 10 cats, and he said what they should do with Big Brother, they should send everyone in there, tell them they're filming, but not film it. And everyone's laughing. And he goes, the trouble is, I'd really like to see that.
Yeah. And so generative AI and your thoughts on that,
where's
that taking us? Somewhere positive?
Well, I'm extremely suspicious of all the theories about whether AI is good or bad, because I don't think anyone knows. They're just projecting their own fears or their optimism onto it. It just, you don't know. What I think about it is, let's look at how it works. It's the ghost of our time, because what it does is it goes back and scrapes all our past, I was talking about the fragments earlier on, the fragments of our past. It takes them up and it mashes them up into this complex thing, which then feeds itself back to us. They are actually taking our own past and haunting us with it in a strange...
Telling us it's new,
but actually maybe keeping us stuck in the past. I mean, as I was saying, we're surrounded by images, dreams, music, films of the past. What AI is doing is taking it much further.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going back to our own past. It's going back to our own images, our own language, the words we wrote, the phrases we did, our own emotions, because out there in the server farms are our feelings written down in fragmentary form, little images, little moments, little intense moments of fear and love. And it's just scraping it all, putting it all together in some strange, almost like cubist form, and playing back to us a world built out of that. And if I was going to write a ghost story of now, I would do it about that we are haunted. It's the haunting, which makes me suspect, for which I have no evidence at all, is that AI is not the future. Mm-hmm. It's the final end of the past. It's the moment at which the past came for us. We will have to escape from it.